This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. The Democratic National Convention is happening right now. And while Milwaukee is still considered the host city, the vast majority of the convention is happening digitally because of concerns about the spread of coronavirus. But the convention isn't the only part of this election that has been fundamentally different because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Everything from campaigning to debating will be different from anything we've seen before. Yesterday, WUWM hosted a live event all about the convention, the election, and COVID-19's impact on all of it. Today, we're going to listen back to some of that event. I was joined by Asma Khalid, co-host of the NPR Politics podcast and NPR's main reporter covering the Biden-Harris campaign. Asma, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
So, of course, I'm speaking to you from Wisconsin, where I'm thinking under normal circumstances, you would have been for the convention.
Yeah, I actually had a ticket booked, to be honest, a hotel booked that we had to cancel.
Well, hopefully you'll be able to see our recombobulation area at some point soon. Now, this election year has been decidedly atypical. How has it been so far covering a campaign that has been largely conducted remotely? And as you just said, there's been a lot of changes happening very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, Joy, look, no doubt it's been challenging. And for the first couple of months of the year, I pretty much lived out of a suitcase. I would hardly ever unpack it fully because I knew I was going to hop on another flight. This is, you know, between Iowa up until Super Tuesday. And then everything just really ground to a halt. And I have not been extensively traveling since about March. You know, I've been fortunate enough. I was actually out in Wisconsin, able to do some reporting in Kenosha and some reporting also in Michigan and Florida. But these have all been driving trips, largely voter focused. When you talk about covering Joe Biden, you know, he normally, any normal presumptive nominee would have a plane full of journalists following him to every event. These massive rallies, those aren't happening now. And so what he does are these smaller scale events, mainly in Delaware, where I'm at right now, or in Pennsylvania. And there's just a handful of reporters who are let in. It's a pool situation, meaning that, you know, it's generally just a couple of journalists who cover print or broadcast and radio. And then we all share our notes with one another. So it's nothing at all like what a normal campaign ought to feel like the summer leading up to the election.
Well, and that has to present a lot of challenges. What are some of these challenges that you see that the Biden-Harris campaign is facing as a result of this campaign not being able to have more of an on-the-ground presence?
So I would say one of the biggest challenges that I think both the campaign and then those of us who report on the campaign are feeling in this moment is the difficulty of getting a real pulse on what voters think. And look, the campaign will tell me, and state Democratic parties have told me, that they are making phone calls, they're texting voters, et cetera. But also people who organize admit that some of the best organizations that you can do are face-to-face front porch conversations. And those, at least for the Democrats, have been put on hold for the most part at this point. And what I will say is that, you know, as a reporter, I really relish the opportunity to go to large scale rallies and hear from voters about what they're thinking and go to different communities that we know are going to be really important in the election and do that. And, you know, I mentioned I have been traveling a bit, but even when I travel, it requires so much legwork to pre-interview people, try to make sure that you're in the right place. When I was in Florida, you know, the pandemic situation was a lot more volatile than it was even in the Midwest. And so I had to essentially interview, I think, just about everybody outdoors. And that presents challenges, you know, on its own of just figuring out where to go and where to be. And also in this climate, not everybody really wants to spend an extra couple of minutes talking to someone face-to-face, whether or not you have a mask on.
It has to be difficult. This is one of the big questions that I had as somebody who isn't, you know, a pool reporter, isn't a campaign reporter in that way. It has to be difficult to really gauge the energy behind either campaign, Biden-Harris, Trump-Pence. What are the ways that you have found to work around the conditions that we find ourselves in? What are the ways that you reach out to voters and gauge how they're feeling right now?
So I will say, much like what the campaigns are doing, the phone has become my very good friend. And so I spend a good chunk of time on the phone, whether that's, you know, checking in with the Biden campaign, talking to people within his orbit, people close to him that we think could, you know, offer us some insights, or calling folks, you know, whether it's the state Democratic Party chair in Michigan or Florida, et cetera, where I'm going to be going. And so before I go to any community, I have spent probably at least a week really sort of substantively on the phone with different people that I know I want to talk to, whether it's Democratic leadership or Republican leadership, and not just leadership. I mean, it's sort of like you ask one person for guidance on who to talk to, and they'll give you a half a dozen other names, and then you call those people. And it has required a lot more prep before you're ever able to go out to a particular place. Also, you can't really bank on the fact that you can go to a, you know, what we like to call kind of man on the street interviews that you might do at a beach or in a grocery store parking lot. Those places aren't necessarily going to be as crowded as they might always. I mean, it depends. You know, I was actually out on the lake in Wisconsin earlier this summer, and there were a good number of people to talk to who were happy to speak to a reporter. And I think it was just a nice day, so people were eager to get out there. But my point is I think the phone and making sure that you're keeping in communication with people and really maintaining relationships has felt far more pivotal this election cycle, because I can't meet those people often face to face. And secondly, the other sort of main indicator that I follow a lot are polls. And look, I know a lot of people are skeptical of polls, given some of what we saw an over-reliance on in 2016. But I'm a big believer that you don't just take polls as sort of indicative of what the election results will be, but they are snapshots of this moment in time. And specifically, when we look at state polls and a number of state polls, when we look at trends, those can be telling. And I will say, I think the campaigns are following them. You know, for example, President Trump, we saw that some of his tough on crime messaging wasn't going over particularly well with suburban voters. And we have seen a bit of a shift from him, and we've seen a bit of a staff shakeup as well, as a result of him not seeming to do as well in some of these polls.
Yeah, that's a question I think coming out of 2016 that a lot of us had. Should we rely on polls? What are the polls that we should look at and we should consider? When you're looking at polls, how do you gauge whether or not this is something that's reliable?
I mean, one thing I think that's really helpful to look at is how large of a sample size it was, right? So if you're talking about a poll of 100 people that was across, you know, say hypothetically, the entire state of California, and they didn't really particularly try to model off of making sure that they had, you know, an equal distribution of, say, education levels and races, I think that's a pretty moot poll, you know? But I think that you look at how large the sample size is. You look if they're waiting for certain things like education levels or race. And you also look at who's conducting the poll and how reputable of a source that is. You know, I know, for example, the Pew Research Center, when they do polling, and they don't do as much or as frequent polling as some of these other outlets do, they have a pretty large sample size. And so I find that to be really helpful. But really, Joy, I think what's more helpful for me has been to look at trend lines and to look at, you know, are we seeing systematic repetition across like 5 or 7 polls? And if they're all showing us relatively the same thing, to me, that's something indicative to pay attention to. And the other last thing I will say is there's a poll actually that came across my desk just earlier today, because I've been really interested in what they're doing. It's a group called the Voter Study Group, and it's a group of political scientists who decided to do this survey where I guess you'd call it like a longitudinal survey. And so they interview approximately every week over 6,000 Americans. And they've been doing this, I believe, since the beginning of 2019. And so the goal is leading up to the election, they'll have conducted 500,000 interviews across every county, every congressional district, and every mid-sized U.S. city. And it's really, to me, sort of an unprecedented view into what public opinion looks like. And you know, I think that what it is isn't so much about like who's up and who's down, Joe Biden's up or Donald Trump up. It's a much deeper glimpse into what our public opinion issues, you know, what are some of the issues motivating voters? What do they think about X, Y, or Z topic? And to me, that's actually really helpful because we know some of those issues do motivate voters. It's not just about whether or not, say, Joe Biden is up or Donald Trump is up on a given day, because I think those things are fluid and we all know that. I mean, I look back at 2016 and it seems like, you know, we know Hillary Clinton had a lead up until a certain point, and then that lead very quickly evaporated. And I don't need to tell this to any of you all out in Wisconsin, but I also don't think that there was substantive, really good polling in a number of key states that mattered. I think, you know, Wisconsin, in my view, was not polled as frequently or as enough as it should have been.
Yeah. So turning back to the campaign, last week, of course, Harris was announced as Biden's running mate. How do you think these two fit together on this ticket?
It seems like they complement one another. You know, he is significantly older than her. He is 77. And while, you know, conventional wisdom is that a running mate doesn't really substantively alter the way that people will vote, in the case of Joe Biden, there have often, and there were going to continue to be questions, I think, up until Election Day about who his running mate would be, given the fact that, you know, we don't know if he'll run for a second term, and just given his elderly age. And so Kamala Harris is in her 50s. She is a multiracial woman of color from California. So I would say, you know, by and large, she represents something that is very different than him. When you talk about ideology, though, you know, she was somebody throughout the primary season, because she did run for president herself for a bit, that I don't know that we clearly knew where she stood. You know, there were people within the Democratic Party like Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders who were on the far left progressive side of where the party was. And then there was someone like a Joe Biden who was much more centrist. I think that Kamala Harris tried to find wiggle room to stand somewhere in the middle. And it wasn't always clear that she was able to do that. In my view, ideologically, she is more similar to Joe Biden, but she's able to represent something generationally and racially that is very different than what he does.
Now, some people have looked at Harris as a candidate who could galvanize support from the Black community, which is going to be really important here in Wisconsin, specifically here in Milwaukee, where I am right now. We saw less Black voters coming out in 2016 than they did in 2012 and 2008. In what ways is the Biden-Harris campaign reaching out to Black voters in specifically states like Wisconsin?
Trey, I think that's an excellent question. And the pandemic has made it certainly more challenging for them to do on the ground field organizing. There is a thought, and maybe not even thought isn't the right word. There is certainly an energy and excitement among some leadership within the Democratic Party, Democratic activists who are African-American for Kamala Harris. And prior to Joe Biden selecting her, I heard from many of them who had been pressuring him to choose a Black woman, and they felt like this moment necessitated that, just given the racial protest in the country. I heard from some of them after the decision to choose Kamala Harris, and they told me that they felt validated. They felt like their opinions and their views had been taken seriously. Now, that all being said, these are activists within the party, largely at a national level. Is that going to matter to voters, African-American voters in Milwaukee, who did or didn't show up in 2016? I don't know the answer to that. What I can say is, when I look at states, again, like Michigan or like Florida, which I would argue Michigan is maybe more analogous, but Michigan also has a sizable African-American population that did not show up. One of the things I was struck by is that the state party chairperson told me that they are already, and this was maybe a month ago, at far higher staff numbers of engagement than they ever were for Hillary Clinton. And so there is, I think, widespread recognition amongst Democrats at both a state level, you know, organization as well as a national operation, that what happened in 2016 was partly due to a lack of investment of resources. And so it seems like this, and I've heard this even actually from Wisconsin as well, that there is greater investment of resources. Now, the challenge, Joy, comes back to the fact that you can't knock on doors. You can't actually do a lot of the groundwork organizing that people traditionally do. So if you're, you know, you have more staff and they're texting and they're phone calling, is that going to be sufficient? I just am not entirely sure. And I don't know that any of us know because we've never really lived through an election like this one.
Yeah. So I'm going to go to one of our listener questions. Comparing this election cycle to previous ones, what are you doing differently to get quality answers to questions from candidates and from voters?
So from candidates, I will be candid, it is a challenge. I don't cover the Republicans as much, that's mostly our White House team, but let me maybe start there. With President Trump, we have a candidate, a president, who's running for re-election, who is accessible to the public, right? He does do these press conferences often in the afternoons, but he's not truthful with information. And I will say that that has been a challenge for many journalists in terms of figuring out how to cover him. On the other side, I look at someone like Joe Biden. I have been with him at a couple of pool events. He's, you know, done a couple, I will say, of press conferences. But he, in my view, is not nearly as accessible as I would like him to be at this point, if I'm speaking totally candidly for myself. But I will say, I don't think I'm even speaking for myself. I think a number of journalists would agree. You know, he had this very public rollout with Kamala Harris last week in Delaware. And there was an assumption for many journalists that they might take questions together. They have not sat down for a press conference and been readily accessible to the press. So in terms of getting substantive answers from Joe Biden, it has been a challenge because there are not very many venues for us to question him.
Now we have just a few more minutes here, but I want to end on this question because so much of our conversation has been about how atypical this entire election season has been, but also the campaigns. I mean, the inaccessibility of the candidates is something that's fairly atypical for an election. Do you think this election has the potential to really change the future of campaigning? Do you think this is going to set a new standard for campaigns and election seasons?
I mean, that's a really thought-provoking question, Joy. It's so hard for me to envision what a normal campaign right now will feel like. But what I will say is, if moving forward, the candidates remain this inaccessible, I don't believe that it will be acceptable to voters or to journalists. Right now, there is an understanding from Democratic voters in particular, whom, you know, I talked to and I asked them about Joe Biden, it is acceptable to them that he's not holding large-scale rallies, say, in Wisconsin or Michigan. That being said, I have also heard from some Democrats who have voiced to me that they wish that he could travel out and see them in some sort of safe way, whether it was in a small group setting akin to what he's done maybe in Delaware or Pennsylvania. But I think there's a willingness to be okay with the fact that he's not necessarily going to be able to come out in person because of the pandemic. If there was no pandemic, I'm fairly confident voters would not be this willing to have a candidate who's just not physically as accessible for them. And I would say in terms of being a journalist, I think, you know, some of us are frustrated with or without the pandemic because, you know, we know that we can be there for a pool event. So our argument is if we can be there for a pool speech, we can certainly also be there for a pool press conference.
Yeah. Well, Asma Khalid, thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with us today. I speak for all of us when I say I'm really looking forward to hearing more from you as we near the general election.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Asma Khalid co-hosts the NPR Politics podcast, and she's NPR's main reporter covering the Biden-Harris campaign.